So, with no further ado, Dr. Jefferson.
Geni tanda zo. Oh, mama bagu dala babe tanda za. Oh, mama bagu dala babe tanda za. 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 I'm going to tell you a story, Africa's story, America's story, a universal story, mankind's story, a story that we would rather forget, but lest we forget and another group of people suffer, we must tell and retell this story, so that each coming generation will remember and will know and will see, lest we forget and be destined to repeat. We forget that the Africans had a life before coming to America. They came from varied backgrounds and circumstances and experiences. Some were slaves who were captives and prisoners of war were brought over. Some were out during their daily chores and livelihood and were kidnapped from their hometown or province. And others were youth whose parents believed to be sending them off to school or college who would return to make a better life for themselves and their community. We forget that they had a life before coming to America. Imagine, if you can, both the captive and those who were left behind, awaiting the return of your husband, your wife, your mother, your father, your son, your daughter, your friend. And as days and months linger on, never seeing their faces again.
Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. A long way from home.
We sometimes say, when the slaves came over from Africa, but instead it should be said, when the Africans were brought over from Africa.
By the rivers of Jordan, there we sat down. Yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof, for there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, saying, sing us one of those songs of Zion. But how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? Deep river, my home is over Jordan. Deep river, Lord, I want to cross over into campground. And I couldn't hear nobody pray. I couldn't hear nobody pray. Oh, way down yonder by myself. And I couldn't hear nobody pray in the valley. On my knees with my burden. They had no name. No name, no rights, not even humanity. They were relegated to mere property, mere cattle, owned by another human. Who gave them this so-called right to own another human, this so-called privilege? They were told, don't speak unless spoken to. Your children are no longer your children. Your wife is no longer your wife. Their titles, Mr., teacher, pastor, father, all stripped from them. Well, they could take away the Africans' outward possessions, their home, their title, even their native language. But they couldn't take away their hope and faith in God. And because of this hope, they couldn't take away their song.
I'm building me a home. 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 This earthly house is gonna soon decay. And my soul's gotta have my Lord somewhere to stay. Nora, Nora, let me come in. The doors are fastened and the windows pinned. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. Nora said you done a lost your track. You can't plow straight and keep a looking back. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. Hold on. Hold on. Keep your hand on the plow. Hold on. hand on the plow. Hold on.
The best way to learn the heart of a people is through their music. The history of the people is in the music, and the history of the music is in the people. Even though he was in a strange land and forced to learn a foreign language, his song remained and could not be silenced. To the African, his music and his very soul were one. He couldn't separate his life from his music. Therefore, there were work songs, songs of recreation and play, songs of war, songs of praise and worship to God, songs of loss and death, songs with hidden messages of freedom and escape, such as Still Away, Wade in the Water, Follow the Drinking Gourd, and Go Down Moses. And believe it or not, there were even songs of courtship and marriage.
Oh, ain't gwine stay no longer, gonna pack my bundle and go. 'Cause way over yonder in a guinea blue gown, they got a lady I used to know. Get you ready in the morning, I'm going away to my baby in a guinea blue gown.
I've heard it said that slavery was not as bad as it appeared because the people were always singing. But as Velma Maya Thomas so eloquently stated, she says, let it be known that when the enslaved Africans sang, if they sang, it was to make themselves happy, not because they were happy. Over 12 million Africans were shipped across the Atlantic, although the number purchased by the traders was considerably higher. It's also estimated that over 2 million died during the voyage across the Atlantic. The numbers were so great that Africans who came by way of the slave trade became the most numerous immigrants in both North and South America toward the end of the 18th century. But this form of slavery was unique, however, being turned into a racial caste system. So not only were you a slave, but your children and children's children were to be slaves, property of another human, free labor to be used until you were used up. You could be abused for any reason. You could be lynched or hanged or burned alive just for sport. And the African women, who could they run to if they were visited in the middle of the night by some unwelcome suitor, lest they themselves be beaten or hanged just for having the gall of implying such? Indeed, dark midnight was their cry. Who could they turn to? Who was their advocate? To whom could they run? To none other than to God.
In the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, in the morning when I rise, give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. Give me Jesus. Yes.
Just as God has placed within man a need to reconnect to himself, he's also placed within man the desire to be free. Still away, still away, steal away to Jesus. Steal away, steal away home. I ain't got long to stay. Freedom, oh freedom, oh freedom over me, and before I'll be a slave.
Willing to justify himself, someone asked Jesus the question, who is my neighbor? In other words, who is my brother? Who is my sister? Is it only someone who looks like me? Only someone from my own particular neighborhood or social class or racial group? Is it only someone from my own particular church? Who is my neighbor? The priest and Levite answered this question by their actions toward the man who was overtaken by thieves and left for dead on the side of the road. So did the Samaritan, who also took action. Notice I did not say that the priest and Levite answered the question, who is my neighbor, by their inaction. A great spiritual leader stated, we are humanized and dehumanized in and through our actions toward others. There is no neutrality in a situation of injustice or oppression. If we say that we are neutral, we're not telling the truth because we've already taken sides. God is not a neutral God. We have a God who does take sides. Those who spoke out against the atrocities of slavery and injustice did so with great risk of loss of life or peril. What do we stand to lose? Even more so, what do we stand to gain? Frederick Douglass, Harriet Beecher Stowe, William Lloyd Garrison, Harriet Tubman, John Brown, and so many others were all ordinary people like you and me who answered the question, who is my neighbor,
by taking action. They took action along with the Samaritan. What action will we take?
John Brown's body lies a-molding in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-molding in the grave. John Brown's body lies a-molding in the grave. But his soul is marching on. He captured Harper's Ferry with his 19 men so true. And he frightened old Virginia till she trembled through and through. They hung him for a traitor, themselves a traitor troop, but his soul is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel, deliver Daniel, deliver Daniel? Didn't my Lord deliver Daniel? Why not every man? He delivered Daniel from the lion.
Their heart was brought low with troubles. They were weak, and there was no helper. Then they cried to the Lord in their affliction, and he saved them out of their distress, and he brought them out of darkness and the shadow of death, and broke their bonds asunder. God is in control. But God works through us. God works through you and me. We are his hands. We are his feet. We are his mouth. We are the expression of God's love in this world. Just who is my brother? Who is my sister? You are. You are. You are.
He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the whole world in his hands.
Thank you, Dr. Jefferson. He's agreed to play one more song as our offertory. So, to support the being able to bring speakers like this and the ongoing work that we do for peace and justice and building beloved community in this world, you're invited to give generously in support of this congregation.
I dreamed of a perfect place with but one human race. There were no tears, no doubt, no fears. All hate had disappeared. I dreamed all men were free. There were no boundaries. No selfish.
And as we extinguish our chalice and prepare to go from this place, I will beg your indulgence just briefly. I would, after hearing this, I want to take you to a very brief hop, skip, and a jump through UU history and where it intersects with some of the really powerful songs and music that Dr. Jefferson has presented to us. I want to start and end with a song, but not me singing it, because I'm not Dr. Jefferson. He sang for us this morning, John Brown's Body, and that is a good reminder that in the 19th century, our Unitarian and our Universalist forebears were very active in the abolitionist movement. Now, some were like William Ellery Channing, who were moderates, but eventually were so convinced by the plight of the slaves that wrote tracts like a book called Slavery by Channing, that he said, I'm a moderate, but I've been convinced that slavery is completely wrong. We must stand against it. But then you had more radicals, such as Theodore Parker. So you spoke about John Brown's Body and John Brown was white and said, if necessary, we should use even violence to overthrow slavery. And some agreed, some disagreed with that, including within Unitarian Universalism. But the way that John Brown's raid on the federal armory at Harper's Ferry just down the road from this was funded was by a group called the Secret Six. Five of those Secret Six were Unitarians. I think four of them were Unitarian ministers. So it's worth going back. I did a sermon this summer about that. And of course, that song, John Brown's Body, was adapted by Unitarian Julia Ward Howe into the Battle Hymn of the Republic. So let's start there with John Brown's Body, and let's go hop, let's go to skip. We're going to go to part two. It says the mid-19th century, let's go to the mid-20th century. When Dr. King, so we're coming up, this. I'm going to do a sermon in March on the 50th anniversary of the Selma to Montgomery March. We're coming up on that. And when Dr. King was planning that Selma to Montgomery March, he issued a call to ministers, white and black, to come to Selma. And we haven't always gotten it right as Unitarian Universalists, but we showed up in Selma. And I'll say more about that, but that had consequences, because when you show up for the poor and marginalized, it's a risk. In particular, it's a risk we need to take, but it's a risk. So James Reeb, a minister from Boston, a Unitarian minister, he was on staff at All Souls Unitarian D.C. He was in that Selma to Montgomery march. He was beaten to death. He's one of our martyrs. There's a James Reeb Society right now that is working on keeping voting rights, as voting rights are under threat, that it's out of Unitarian D.C. Viola Liuza, out of the Midwest, was also killed, a white Unitarian woman, as part of that. But as powerful as that was and as much goodwill as that brought between some of the majority white Unitarian community and the African-American community, and we started to have more people of color in our congregations, all that came to a head in the late 1960s at General Assembly through what is known as it's traditionally known as the Black Empowerment Controversy. Our first African-American president of the UUA says, we have named that wrong. It is the White Power Controversy. And what happened is that a lot of money was promised to African-Americans to help fund anti-racism work, but through, I will just say directly, financial mismanagement of money. A lot of money was squandered in the 1960s, and so the money wasn't there, and it wasn't explained well. Anyway, that led to a lot of bad will. It led to African Americans, people of color, and white allies walking out of UU General Assembly. A lot more to say about all that in the late 1960s. So let's skip from there to 1992, General Assembly in Calgary. A reaffirmation was made so that we did this amazing work in the mid-1960s for racial justice, and then a lot of that was squandered in the late 1960s, and we kind of burned 2 decades. So then in 1992, we reaffirmed our commitment to anti-racism, anti-justice work, and multiculturalism. But here's why what Dr. Jefferson has done is so important for us to hear these songs, to know the story of our heritage, as painful as it can be to hear, is that the very next year after Calgary and reaffirming our anti-justice, anti-racism, multiculturalism work, GA was in General Assembly, was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And they said, so that was the district at that time known as the Thomas Jefferson District of the UUA. It's now the Southeast District. And they said, you know, Thomas Jefferson was such a great Unitarian. Why don't we have a Thomas Jefferson ball? So a bunch of white liberal Unitarian Universalists got together planning GA and said, why don't we have a Thomas Jefferson ball? And you come dressed in period garb. They got all the way to the GA, and then when some African Americans, you know, and people of color and people that knew this history stood up and said, do you want me to wear chains? You know, what would garb then be? And we, of course, all know about, you know, are we supposed to wear chains? So it's that obliviousness that well-meaning liberals, white liberals, can sometimes do because we don't know the history. And there is important history in the 19th century of abolitionist forebears and of social justice. So let's skip ahead, especially since I'll frame it here with another song, is that I was at General Assembly in Providence this summer, and one of the workshops was called Singing for Our Lives. Some of you that have been around here a while know that hymn, Singing for Our Lives. And they were telling about, out of that voting rights heritage, that there was UUs who had shown up for a voting rights protest. And it was a mixed, racially mixed protest. And they came up, though, the planned route was blocked by police officers. And they weren't sure what to do. And all of a sudden, an African-American woman, not a Unitarian Universalist, but came forward and started singing, We Shall Overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. And a few of the African-American police officers, they moved out of the way. That's the power of these songs. That's the power of knowing our history and heritage. Because all of a sudden for them, racial justice was more important than being a police officer that day. So thank you again. And so as we all prepare to go from this place, continue your journey walking in love. Care for one another and care for this one earth. Do justice and make peace. And know that whatever taste or touch you've had in this time and place of hope, of love, of peace or joy, that goes with you into the world. We're different for having been together in this time and place. So live boldly and with thanksgiving. Go in peace.